Wait, one second. Thank you. I thought that won't come to be on Tuesday, next week Tuesday, when I'm looking for Kim, that each and every presenter will do their best to ensure that we do get, you know, value-adding movement and cost to ensure that we have a structure, you know, in this industry, within the context of what was raised in any case, if I can just recall, when we have public hearings on these small bills, where a couple of presentations indicated that, not to send respect that we're handling these small bills, but even the electricity sector itself, it needs to be one. And I see this is an attempt to, amongst other things, change the fortune of that electricity sector and exhaustively address it. And of course, as you know, at the end of the day, whatever the outcome from this public hearing is, it will have to be referred to the executive, and all of us will definitely intend to ensure that we work with the executive and have, you know, clear implementation, and down the line we can have proper infrastructure in the electricity industry. So we take on board the new electricity volumes that we expect to come pretty soon. So much for the introductory remarks. According to the program, we will be getting the initial briefing from the Energy Institute, from the Cape Peninsula Institute of Technology, where they will give us an analysis of our meeting, which took place on the 21st of February. If you remember, and also the 9th of September 2009, if you remember the background of this meeting, that we had a full day meeting on the 21st of February, looking at the getting briefings from various quarters around the electricity business in industry. And it is out of that that we decided that we have public hearing. So it's appropriate that we make the linkage between this public hearing and that meeting. So, can we have the Energy Institute? I'm corrected here. So this can just be the document that we have. We will allow Dr. Bibia to just give us a background to the electricity institution where we come from hitherto. Over to you, Mr. Bibia.
Honorable Chairperson, I've been performing the engagement. Thank you very much for the opportunity. The presentation is going to be very brief because I think more people will give a lot of detail around this topic. So fundamentally, I'm going to touch on the historic context, the supply industry in South Africa, the challenge of that, and then some observations. This slide, you might ask the question, now what has it got to do, the first three slides in Paris, with where we are today? But there are two points that I want to raise out of this thing, and that is the third bullet in 1882, when Kimberley in South Africa was the first to have street lines, and the last bullet in 23 when Eskom, or the Electricity Supply Commission, then was established. The point that I want to make out of this slide is that we've been in this business since inception. We've been around for many, many years. So therefore, we should not be in a situation where we can't address the challenges that are confronting us. And that's the fundamental point that I want to make right up front. That we've been around in this industry since inception, we've been the leaders throughout the years, and the question that we then have to ask ourselves, how do we get ourselves in the mess where we are currently, and how do we get out of that? Now, if a person looks at the supply industry, on the power generation side, we've done it a lot, but it took 2007 and 2008 to really give us a wake-up call, when we all of a sudden ended up with a situation of building blackouts that we've never seen before. But when that happened to we immediately had a plan. We made a plan and we got it sorted out, and I think we can now all say we haven't seen those rolling blackouts anymore, and we've got a plan to take us into the future. How robust the plan is, time needs to tell us. How successful it's going to be, whether we're on target, time needs to tell us. But we've got a plan, we do something about it. If a person then looks at transmission grid, there's a fair amount of work taking place in that area, and an attempt to make sure that we stay abreast of the challenges. If we then go into the area which is in that red dotted line, the electricity distribution industry, for some reason or the other, we think fairies will sort that one out. Because we have a fighter, and then we don't like the face, and then we run away. And then we have another fighter, and we don't like the face, and we run away. And I don't think this is how you're going to solve the supply industry in South Africa, because we must remember it is the last mile that takes the supply to the customer. You can have all the generation in the world, you can have all the transmission in the world. If you do not have a sustainable distribution infrastructure, you don't have service to the customers, and then you must not be surprised when you have service delivery challenges and you find that people are very unhappy about it. When you sit with major tariff challenges, etc., if you're not willing to address that part of it, it will not talk about it by itself. Now, if a person then looks at the industry further, the distribution industry plays a significant role in the economy of any country in the world, and in our case, it's really the lifeblood of our economy. Without electricity, very little is going to happen, and even if you talk in a broader context of energy, it remains the lifeblood. The EDI, in essence, is an asset-centric business or utility. It's got a massive infrastructure base. It's a base that we've built up over the years, and our 2008 value was roughly 260 billion rand worth of assets in there. The question is, who's looking after the asset and how are we looking after that asset? But what is also important is that the sustainability of this industry is directly dependent on infrastructure performance. Customers will not pay for interruptions. They pay for the availability of supply and the quality thereof. I don't think they're willing to pay for interruptions. The ability to serve the customer effectively becomes critical, and then obviously the ability to collect the revenue. Chair, I always say this is a very simple industry. You buy electricity, you sell electricity, you send your bill, and you don't collect your money, and you restart the cycle again. You know, in the simple form. Now the question is that if you don't have infrastructure to serve the customer, and you don't have effective billing to go to build the customer, and the capability to collect your money, you're in trouble. So that has explained why we have certain challenges. The EDI remains a major employer of people in this country. It's one of the biggest industries in the country. And currently, the EDI industry requires substantial investment in the infrastructure. So if a person then try and summarize in a picture, we find that the age of the assets are on the increase. The average age is in the order of 45 years. And I think we all know now, if you look after assets, you need to look after yourself, you can serve for a long time. The costs and revenue, the costs are on the increase, and the revenues are getting less and less. Major pressure on that. There's a major demand for reliability. More and more people have moved more into a technology-enabled environment, and we have challenges around that. The budgets are, in general, on the decrease. I think you can look at any of the budgets. Most of them are the subject of cutting. How do you cut? And it's easy to cut maintenance, for example, because you don't see the sins or the impact of the sin today. You only see it in years to come. We do have a challenge around the fuel. At this point in time, we have a major vacancy in the broader of the industry, but municipalities in specific when we talk about the electricity part of it. The planning horizons are getting shorter and shorter. And Chair, one of the challenges that you have in this industry, and I've got no issue with short-term contracts, but I get the feeling that we all try to run this industry with a view aligned with our contracts. If I've got a five-year contract, then I try to survive for 5 years, and I do what is important in the 5 years, and if that is cutting the budget, then I'll do that. And in year six, I'll worry whether I get a new contract. So the planning horizons are getting shorter and shorter, which is a challenge. The electricity price, I don't think I have to inform this house what's happening to the price, but we have to be a challenge in that area. The customer service level in general in the industry is not where it should be, and as a matter of fact, it's rather decreasing, and so is service delivery. done just in the last couple of years. In 2003, we had the maintenance summit. 2004 and 2008, we had a follow-up of the maintenance summit. In 2006, the first NAFTA reports came out. In 2008, we had the UBS investment research report, which reinforced all the points that I've made up till now. 2008, we are holding developed the approach to distribution asset management. We took it for all the relevant parties and people, and everybody agreed that is a good idea, let's go and do it. And that is basically where we stopped. In 2006 to 2010, we are holding ring-fenced roughly 56 municipalities, removed Eskom from 7 to 6 regions, and we had all the results in terms of how this industry is performing. So the point that I'm trying to make today is not uninformed. There is sufficient of documented proof that that is the current situation in South Africa. And then in 2010, Eskom also identified roughly 1,000 constrained feeders, and this put a plan in place, and we need to recognize that to deal with it. So the EPA intervention today mainly focused on the business as usual related challenges, i.e. dealing with today's problems within the constraints of today's technology and what we have available. You can let us try and sort out the industry within that. So if a person then tries to summarize some of the key challenges that we've got, I think it starts with largely with management and leadership. We require firm management and we require firm leadership to turn this industry around and do what we know we have to do. The ineffective management of the revenue cycle is creating a major problem. You cannot keep on just biting off the debt and don't deal with it. Without the money, you'll have to run the treasury, and we know that is not a sustainable strategy in any business. You can't just keep on putting increase the burden on the handful of paying customers and then the other customers get off the hook. So it's something that we have to address whether we like it or not. The high technical and non-technical losses in this industry is unsustainable. You cannot have a business and some of the entities in excess of 40% combined technical and non-technical losses. You cannot run a business on that basis. Our maintenance, refurbishment and strengthening backlog is on the increase, and therefore you even have in major cities today areas where you cannot expand anymore because we do not have the capacity on the grid to expand. I cannot understand how we are surprised today that your electrification rollout is constrained because it is as simple as a backbone can't support what you hang on to the rest of the infrastructure. So somewhere along the line you have to buy issuing torches so that the people can see where the lights are on. So that is a type of the infrastructure that you try to create. I've touched already on the average 45 years of the asset age. We also have to keep in mind that the asset that we brought today in the distribution business was not really designed for the 21st challenger. If you think about renewable energy and all the other things and the potential of electric vehicles into the future, the infrastructure is not designed for that, and we better address it earlier than later. I've touched on the vacancy rate. The skills, recruitment, retention, and development of resources within this industry. And then the EDI is not structured to ensure sustainability, and the operating model is largely outlived. I personally do not believe our current model is the answer for going forward. And then the majority of the municipalities find it difficult to remain financially sound and to meet their compliance requirements. We've just seen the latest audit report that came out from the AG yesterday or the day before, and I think it speaks for itself. So some of the observations that I've made is that if the will is there and the leadership is provided, we can resolve the EDI challenges. We do not have to fly in people from elsewhere in the world to come and sort out our problems. We just need the will and the leadership and we can sort it out. I think the solutions that we are looking for are specifically around the infrastructure. And as far as that is concerned, we've got sufficient documented proof of what we have to do. We might have to take those documents, update it so that it takes into account the latest technology, developments, etc., and make sure that it can take us forward. But we've got most of the documents in hand to address the issue. The next thing is the service delivery. If we are not going to do something about the service delivery and make everybody happy with the service that we are receiving, we are going to have major challenges going forward. And then we need to look at resource optimization and effective deployment. My personal view is that we need to look at the pockets of good performance left, and that is perhaps your bigger municipalities and your metros, the extra distribution business, and use that to try and do an immediate intervention, and through that capability start addressing the immediate challenges and move forward from there. To continue as is will not resolve the EDI challenges. Chair, I submit we have now successfully tuned EDI holdings. The problems are still there. Since 2010 up to today, we've seen very, very little consolidation of really working together and sorting out the problem. It's the same picture that we've seen for the past 10, 12 years. So what will change it now if there's not pressure on that process to do so? I don't think we have to wait until we have a full-scale crisis like that on the generation and then to intervene. We all know now as we speak today that the problem is getting worse and worse by the day, so I think we need to deal with it. I think it's essential, and the point that I just made earlier, that we need to leverage the limited of pockets of good performance and excellence, and from there move on and create capability. So I think some of the questions that one needs to try and address, particularly over the next 3 days, is that ESI is an integrated industry. Chair, I can't overemphasize it. We must get out of this picture of if I sort out generation and I sort out transmission, the rest will fix it by default. It's not going to happen like that. It's an integrated business, and ultimately, you are going to see the challenge when the real last mile starts to collapse. We can't deal with this industry in a segmental way. We must invest money in the distribution infrastructure, and we're talking about substantial investment. So one can just as well then also start linking to the capabilities presented by technology today to work harder. As we speak at this point in time, there is no entity in South Africa where on the low voltage side, if the customer doesn't phone you, that you will know that the customer is in the market. So therefore, if the customer doesn't have access to phoning you, don't be surprised if they ask for 3 weeks without supply. Because how will you know it? And I think this is just one example of where we can be more effective and efficient. I think we can learn from what's happening in the telecommunication industry, how they've advanced over the last couple of years. I think there are challenges that we have to deal with, the climate change, the whole question of the level of integration. I find it very, very difficult to see how we're going to have embedded generation on the distribution side, which is falling apart. I just fail to understand how we think that is going to work. If we talk about energy efficiency, how you introduce energy efficiency on something that do have severe constraints already and performance, it's a difficult one. And then the whole question of the technology revolution. It's happening very, very fast, and I think we need to capitalize on that. I think then also, if we are sincere about the customer participation in the EDI, we need to do something about it so that we start listening to the customer and don't wait until there's a demonstration and then we all run out there as if it's the first time that we've heard it. You know, we're going to see more of this coming forward. So, in a nutshell, Chair, I'm of the opinion that if we leverage the capability that we've got now and we derive a level of consolidation through the entities with the capability, it's something that we can do. I believe we need to look at the asset management side, and as much as we might not like it, I think it should be a centrally, nationally driven process, and we will have to find the funding at the national level. I don't think it's going to work to ask every municipality in South Africa and Eskom alone to find the funding. We will have to have a consolidated approach to that funding, and from there we can move. And I think then lastly, we need to look at how can we use technology to enable us to not be fully dependent always on people or a pigeon with a letter to send and say, I'm without power. There are better ways of dealing with it. I don't think our answer only lies in just finding new, more bodies to deal with it. And Chair, that to me, in a nutshell, is where we are coming from in the industry. I am one of those people that firmly believes we can resolve the problem if we apply our mind to it and we demonstrate the leadership and we leverage the opportunities at hand. And let us not underestimate the opportunity that we have. We must invest in the infrastructure. If we do it in a well-coordinated and integrated way, we can save the country a lot of money and we can do the right things for the right reasons at the right place. Okay, thank you.
By that, it's going to be a central one, actually. What we want to see is that the revolution, but because of the fashion, even that's the tone, created a very good framework. I'm drawn very strongly to your Canaan, auditing to be done, and even addressing investment into the area. That's quite, let alone the culmination to the Adam program. But that also captures quite a great extent, to a certain extent. But some work and the previous work has been done. Anyway, it's not for me to get to the stage today. Mine is not anything more than anything. Dr. Gliet, thank you very much. Now, if you, members, if you realize that usually you would get the department, that's the problem that they are not the department understand. All I wanted to do today is just to say, someone has just given a history of what has been happening in this industry in the past, you know, what major benchmarks can be, as Professor Didier has done, that it certainly it gives us a nice balance sheet of various major initiatives that have been taken in the past. And Dr. Light now from the Energy Institute, Education and Excellence, just to give us an analysis of the minutes of February 21st this year, and also links us to the minutes of September 2009. Just an oversight, let me humbly apologize. I was supposed to be co-chairing the public hearing. Honorable Chairman, who unfortunately has been held up with other commitments in Pumala. And it is appropriate that also guest members of the Cultural Committee for Energy will also recognize the presence of the members from the Cultural Committee for Culture, so the name. Thanks very much for coming, and also Happy Enterprise. Thanks very much for coming. That signifies that to the rest of us who are attending, that we are doing our work as a team intellectually, you know, on this matter, and ensure that the outcome of this exercise would bring out quite a formidable set of recommendations for the speaker to continue. Let me welcome once again Professor Lloyd. I see your whole team is here. Let me welcome Professor Uken. I don't see the Professor Diede. Oh, you are just the author. Okay, for all these things, right? you're very well welcome. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, you were asked to have a look at this meeting, the 21st of February, and it turned out to be a very fascinating study. What I would like to start with, however, is just having a look at some of the recent history. This committee considered the electrical distribution industry in September 2009. What there was under consideration at that particular stage was the Constitution 17th Amendment Bill, and what that was proposed to do was to give government the power to intervene at the national, at the local government level, to try and achieve some regional efficiency. It's hoped to restructure the EDI into a fixed regional electricity distribution kind of thing, and the reds were going to be public entities and properly regulated. The problems were very clearly spelled out at that stage. That was September 2009. A highly fragmented structure of the industry, very widespread range of tariffs of electricity distribution, and a very uneven spread of electrification and stuff like that. The idea was that both Eskom and municipalities would transfer their assets into the grid, and the employees and various other things. The reds will be completely new companies, which are jointly owned by Eskom, national and local governments, and various other details there. work, the question is, what are we going to do now? And the meeting of the Soviet Secretary shows that the problems just haven't changed. They're just the same as they were. Various things came up. One of the ones was that India had a very, very good job. And in producing, as virtually its final report, the approach to distribution asset management, ADAM, it's done very well. The other thing that the meeting showed was what was recommended in ADAM of some 25 billion. It had grown from that time to today by about 2.5 billion a year. We heard the same from Sanedi just now. But it has grown. And so going forward, I think the better approach is as ADAM Plus. In case anybody thinks that 25 billion is enough, it's quite fair. So what we need to do is, we've got an excellent plan handed over to us by EDIO, and we are what was needed to implement ADAM Plus at that point. When we went into the analysis of what everybody said at the February meeting, it was quite clear that all the structures were in place to actually act on it. What they needed to do now was actually to put their act together and do something. There's no point just sitting there and saying you've got a problem. We also have a solution facing us, and this kind of needs to happen. So we looked at what needed to happen. And that we brought from the Treasury, the finance committee side of things. What was needed was to actually set up a source of funding for what I call ADAM Plus. There were a couple of issues that came up on certain amount of analysis. There was the municipalities report in two different ways. My business background, I know that reporting in two different ways has always been dangerous. Reports to both NERSA and to the Treasury and at different times of the year. That was crazy. And what we suggested was that as part of licensing of the institution, that NERSA should actually administer those funds as part of the licensing procedure. And from the Treasury side of things, it is an equitable share that goes to municipalities. They need to resolve, if there is some ADAM funding, how on earth to distribute the equitable share along on resolve the equitable share in the light of the ADAM Plus one. The Department of Energy, looking at their presentation in February, it was quite clear they were in an analysis mode, as I call it. I could equally call it a paralysis mode, I suppose. It is reanalyzing ADAM. And just looking at what they actually have to try and resolve or improve upon ADAM, we didn't think they were going to make much headway because they actually lack the resources that EDI had. And I think it's a very good idea to actually accept ADAM as it presently is, was accepted by everybody at the time. Of course, it needs a little bit of updating, but it certainly doesn't need to spend a lot of time debating whether we need 25 billion or 35 billion. We need the money, and we need it to be spent. The Department of Energy in 2010 was asked by Cabinet to address certain regulatory changes affecting municipalities. Nothing has so far emerged in 2 years down the way. They're also doing a little bit of work preparing a cabinet memo to get ADAM approved in some way. But what now we actually need right now is action, not any more now. When we get to NERSA, I'm sorry I can't make you any presentation, but you may just have to hand out in front of you. One of the striking things was that NERSA turned out to have 80% of all the new municipalities had accepted the tariff that NERSA had put up. And there were some certain problems in the NERSA tariff setting process, and there were certain problems with regard to the timing vis-à-vis the reporting to the Treasury, where I voted earlier on. Those are very simple things that I thought could have been resolved quite easily, but the real point that needs to be driven home is the fact that the NERSA tariff have been accepted by 80% of all municipalities. And I think that's an important point, because NERSA actually has a very commanding position already established. That was one of the things that came out of our analysis on that. I think it's quite clear that NERSA needs to find some sort of formula for the rehabilitation costs and some guidelines for municipalities, the extent to which they can In principle, we thought it was a poor idea for a municipality to cut the use of sales electricity down the budget. Electricity is a very valuable commodity. It drives the whole economy in many ways. To use it to cross-subsidize is in fact putting the price of electricity up, which is unnecessary in many ways. It shouldn't be necessary. We recognize, however, that it is necessary. But we would stress that with the arrival of renewable energy into the picture in the near future, it's going to be even more important to look after the electron. The Mercer tariff, therefore, we think should have three components. One, the cost of electricity, which should include maintenance and regulation. Two, the cost of rehabilitation and extension, which should also be ring-fenced. And three, some social allowance. There's the social allowance built into the tariff that we actually know what that cost of subsidization is. I think it made a lot of idea. And really, ring-fencing is reckoned by Treasury to be a very poor idea. I'm not certain that when it comes to expenditure, it's a poor idea at all. I think it's very necessary that certainly any municipal allowance is likely to be ring-fenced, that we actually know what goes where. And that way the neighbour will be assured that the assets that the municipalities rely upon are properly looked after. So licensing should require full accounting for all these ring-fenced allowances and so on. But regarding the ESCOM, we thought that the ESCOM had really been treated somewhat unfairly by by the other people in the distribution industry. It does, after all, successfully distribute electricity to nearly half the without any of the problem. So it's really an example of what can be achieved in what your mind is. One of the things that really came out that struck us very firmly was that ESCOM had an offer on the table to assist with technical skills, energy losses, pricing planning, everything else. At the same time, COPTA has also got a proposal for a municipal infrastructure support agency, and we thought, really, this was the time that there should be a synergy between ESCOM and COPTA to bring the two parties together and solve this problem that is faced of the municipalities not having the capability of managing their assets properly. It could be fixed and resolved by ESCOM working with COPTA. In that particular way. Both have got exactly the same end. Both should be doing things in the same direction. When we came down to municipalities, COPTA, SALGA, A and EU, that side of things, they all had basically the same message. Just trying to assess what they were doing, what we felt was missing was the fact that they didn't realise that assets had got to be managed to make certain that they remain a source of revenue. And that means that they've got to gather some more funds to maintenance, rehabilitation, modernisation, all of that. Of course, they don't have the funds, and that's why Adam, or Adam Plus, is there as something we need to look at. The other side of things that they've got to realise is that ESCOM is not the enemy. One's got a very clear feeling from the municipalities that they regarded ESCOM as being somehow the greedy and taking food away from them. I don't think that's true. What one has to remember is that for a long while, ESCOM was responsible for delivering electricity outside municipal boundaries, and those municipal boundaries have since grown. So of course, ESCOM is now, here in the Western Cape, we've got the West Coast is still serviced by ESCOM, which gets the Century City and that part done by the municipality. So there is this overlap of distribution between ESCOM and the municipalities. It can probably be resolved. One of the things that needs to be resolved is to try and find some sort of formula transferring assets where municipalities feel they are being hard done by from ESCOM to the municipalities. And I think that in that particular case, one needs to look at a pricing model for the assets that's somewhat different from the ones that are presently used by NERSA. Something more like the sort of way in which you value purchasing, shall we say, a lot of flats. You look at the revenue stream, and you look at the maintenance on that and other costs on that particular asset. And then you can come up with a value idea of evaluation. NERSA tends to look at the capital assets involved and not worry about the revenue stream. But if you value it in terms of return on revenue, return on your asset that you expect, that will give you an asset price in a fairly sensible sort of way. One of the complaints out of the municipality trailing electrification until there was, of new development, until there was about 80% occupancy and those things. He thought that that particular complaint was not justified in terms of economics. You need a revenue flow out of your assets. You therefore need quite a lot of occupancy. 80% might be a little higher, but you're certainly going to have to get something like 70% occupancy of an area before you electrify, because otherwise you don't get a revenue stream adequate towards the asset there. When it came to the technical staff side of things, it was quite clear that there are major problems there. Everybody reported that there are major problems on the technical staff. I think that the provision of the technical staff should be a licensing condition, because you can't maintain these highly technical assets unless you've got proper technical staff. Where are they going to come from? I think there are probably sufficient there. One of the things that has got to happen quite clearly is that the remuneration structure and the whole human resource structure of the technical side of municipality has got to be re-looked at. In many of the local, the smaller local areas, the technical resources are reckoned to be just sometimes retaken. They are not properly remunerated. And I think something needs to be done there. We have to recognise the fact that municipalities, and at the distribution level, there has been problems, a lack of policy direction in recent years. One thing that we thought of was suggesting in fact a special power for the people programme needs to come, where we actually go for, once the Adam funding has been sourced, just as the power for the people is coming, we are fixing the problems that you are experiencing. But that's got to be backed by something from the municipalities themselves. They have to take responsibility of these non-technical losses, which you heard from Panelli earlier on. Some places are very large indeed. It is their revenue which is being stolen. They've therefore got to look after the maintenance of that revenue source. They can't just put the drug they have, so we can't create the revenue. We can't stop costs. We can't do those things. It's their assets that they've got to look after. They've got to take responsibility for that. Then, finishing off, we discovered that there was something missing from the entire debate. And we searched the written record, we searched for all manner of things, and there was nothing there. It was actually a great surprise. But nobody in the entire February meeting spoke about an independent system marketing operator. Nobody did. And that suggests to us, we better ask the question, do we really need an independent system of marketing operator? Isn't this fact something that has been acquired from the European sort of experience? That suggests that we need something like that. Trying to answer that question for ourselves, would it solve anything? Would it solve the problems that we're currently looking at? And what we came to the conclusion when we discussed it was that, in fact, all the institutions necessary to solve the present difficulty are in place. What's needed is that we have them act, and then we will solve the present difficulty. We don't need another organisation. But that led to another sort of question to ourselves. What about this monster called ESCOM? What we suddenly realised was that ESCOM is doing a very good job on the distribution side of things. It's doing a reasonably good job on the transmission side of things. It's also doing generation. But it would be very easy to make the cut at the generation side of things. So that particular one, Chen, thanks for the opportunity to provide you with any questions we got there.
Thanks very much, Dr. Roy. Unfortunately, your slides and the list are only short enough to wash it. And also, I thought at home that we will take note of the input that I need, and mainly the effort of the state in mind, but that to ensure that we craft and integrate what has been done in the past and what we are attempting to do at the same time. So shall we then move on to the Department of Energy? And there was to bring this over, I hope Professor Lloyd will be able to get us the original presentation.
Of course, I have
this just doesn't have the plan. But we still would like to ensure that it's shared with everyone, not only members, but others, everybody. Well, Kim Energy, over to you. That's the careful, I'm the only one who knows.
Thank you, Chesterfield. Honorable members, good morning. My name is Thaba Mutai from the Department of Energy. So my presentation for this morning, in terms of the content, I thought it's probably proper to have a look at certain key elements in the industry. And what I wanted to focus on is one, the creative environment that the industry currently operates within, as well as the current infrastructure status. And I think these two, from our perspective, are very key. And that is following on from the Kenyan institution of September 2010 to wind up the operation of the airway. So in terms of the focus of my presentation, I think the entire value chain of electricity development, I will be focusing mainly in the distribution sector, especially in the industry. In terms of the current key players, we have ESCOM, as well as 182 odd municipalities. They share the customer base as well as the sales and revenue in those percentages that you can. Both ESCOM and the municipality operate within this industry under the tariff applications approved by the regulator. The regulator is mandated through the Electricity Regulation Act to issue certain licenses to these operators. The issue of the legislative environment we see as I go into the details of the presentation, that somehow there's a dual mandate to the municipality. And this emanates mainly between what is detailed in the current version of the Constitution, as well as from the Electricity Regulation Act. So, but I'll get into the details. Just some feedback on the industry. Perhaps important point to note here is that this industry is facing approximately 9 million customers. So, you know, you can get a flavor of choose this last chain of the very same. How many people will be directly the average asset age within this industry is 40 years plus, and that for us is a worrying factor. It means, you know, most of these assets are nearing their retirement stage of asset life aspect. So So in terms of the decisions that since 1999 have been taken by academy and other institutions within the information industry, we have, if you like, gone through a full service where in 1999 cabinet made a certain approval, mainly to transit from the then status quo to establishment of the regional electricity distributor. Now, PDI volumes was established in 2003, and as you can see, the lower three neighborhood sector is where plus minus 6 years, where the PDI volumes was, you know, trying to establish the regional electricity meter. There were other tasks that PDI volumes assumed, and one of those key tasks was the assessment of the current status of the assets within the industry. So this led to a report that both of us have been referring to this morning. Mainly that report indicates that we have a huge problem within distribution industry, and that in terms of the current status of electricity assets. In 2005, Red One in Western Cape was established, only to be wound up after 18 months. And one of the reasons why this happened is that provision in the Constitution that gave certain power to municipality. So essentially, the Constitution made the establishment of the REV a voluntary process from the municipality side. So that in 2005, after REV had been established, it was reversed by the municipal council. Then in December of 2010, the cabinet took another decision to essentially wound up operations of PDI volumes. However, the problems within the industry still remain. Closing shop of PDI that is not necessarily mean that all the problems have been solved. We are still faced with the same problems that we faced with, if not worse, in 1999. And that, research has been, is the focus of this department, as mandated by the cabinet, to resolve some of these problems. In terms of the initial thinking of establishing the REV, just a quick overview. The country was looking at having six regional electricity distributors. And as stated before, all the assets would then belong to these six entities. So that highlights in terms of what we were envisaging in 2009. Now, coming to the legislative environment that I indicated earlier, Chapter 7 of the Constitution is certain powers and functions to municipalities. So this is as it currently is. More especially Section 156, which gives executive authority and the right to administer special services to the municipality. And for our purpose of today, we will be focusing on the electricity recirculation. So, as summarizing the slide, the municipalities had those executive powers to provide electricity services to any municipality. So, that's one way of the legislative environment. On the other side,
that's where the protest, you know. Why say recirculation is not a service? Because it says the party of Asian form, electricity is gas recirculation. I just wanted to, along with that, say recirculation is not a service.
Recirculation is a technical term which essentially means that you take a product from one coin, and then distribute it within the intended end user. So essentially providing a gas service to those end users. So instead of saying a gas service with the same gas distribution, distribute the product that you collect from one coin. So we have electricity recirculation, which is mainly electricity distribution, and we have gas recirculation, which is mainly gas distribution. So the constitution, that's what the constitution provides for. On the other hand, we have the Electricity Regulation Act, which is an act developed by the department, and it regulates the electricity industry by and large. Of importance is Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 of this act. And I want to focus specifically on the powers and functions of the regulator, and more especially when it relates to electricity. So the regulator is empowered through this act to consider applications for licenses in three areas of the electricity value chain, that being generation, transmission, and distribution. So specifically for the municipalities, will be affected by the distribution license, which NERSA would issue. So certain activities that define in the electricity regulation that require licensing of whomever is executive of the team. So in order for the municipality, according to the test, in order for the municipality to be able to provide electricity distribution services, they would require a license from the regulator. Now, that license is a piece of paper, ladies and gentlemen, that comes with certain conditions. And that those conditions must be complied by license holder. One of those conditions is the manner in which the asset must be maintained and serviced. I'm sure the regulator will be able to elaborate in detail as to we have a license holder with those conditions imposed upon them. However, we are continuing to have is now referred to as Adam Plus, a problem. So the question remains, are we not effectively implementing what we should be implementing? This from the regulation point of view. So let me start off from the legislative environment and just get to the technical mandate as defined in the Electricity Regulation Act. So here we're referring to all the assets that are 182 kilovolts up to a point where you switch on a lamp inside your house. So all of those assets, if you can visualize them, are supposed to be managed under this electricity regulation act together with the licenses and associated rules. There is an industry grid code which mainly defines the acceptable levels of service delivery, if you like. So the grid code is developed jointly with the industry holders so that they receive the final information. In terms of the current asset status, in 2007, the regulator undertook some sampling of the municipality. That's for them to understand the extent of the current problem in 2007. This was followed on by EDI warnings report in 2008, which concluded that in 2008, the backlog in terms of asset maintenance and rehabilitation was approximately 27 billion. And the same report also indicated that this 27 billion is not a fixed number, it's increasing by 2.5 billion on an annual basis. So if you do the numbers, you can get to a roughly figure of 35 billion in year 2012. So what one of the programs that Cabinet was not being left as a way of according to the air volume. Was the program to rehabilitate all of these artists? And this program is referred to as the approach to distribution asset management, or ADAM, if you like. That's a quick overview of them. When you look at the country in terms of the fee spread, that's 27 billion. This is how the split looked like then in terms of the fee spread. That's a quick look. We'll tell you that before. We had a backlog of about 6.4 billion, which was the highest in the time. Following on red 3, 2.2 billion, which was the lowest at that time. So this is just a tabular format of the essentially the same information. Now, if in the department attempts to solve the 27 billion problem, we had established what we refer to then as an interdepartmental task team. Because this 27 billion is not only affecting one stakeholder, it affected a whole lot of other departments, national departments, municipalities, and associations. So the interdepartmental task team was formed, which involved, amongst others, NERSA, Treasury, and COFSA. So that the other entities were invited as they were needed. The report that was then developed recommended that we have five possible options to finance the 27 billion program. And at this stage, we need to give a summary that out of all of these, it looks like point number four is most likely what we'll be looking at in 2024. Now, in terms of where things are, you will recall that in February we presented the same plan, which was essentially to resolve the problem in three phases. Phase one, which would be a fourth phase, if you like, compared to the 27 billion problem, was to essentially test the delivery model that the department was using with at that time. So in terms of where things are, we have finalized the version of the test delivery model. However, we are awaiting the approval from National Treasury, because the initial funds that we need to implement phase one are available. However, just need to get an approval. We have to await those approvals from the regulator and from Treasury. The regulator has approved, you know, keep all the boxes that they need to, and all that is left now is to ask to get those approvals from National Treasury. At the point is the department is ready to implement phase one. Now, in closing, ladies and gentlemen, in December of 2010, the restructuring issue was decided by cabinet that we are no longer doing the restructuring. However, within the industry, there are certain problems that the department needs to keep its efforts in resolving. And one of those was the asset rehabilitation. Of course, there are other regulatory challenges that the department is also looking at jointly with the regulator. Now, in terms of us preparing cabinet members, it's not that we want to go back to cabinet and ask for more approval. We recognize that this 27 billion problem is a multi-stakeholder problem. It involves other national departments, other municipalities, regulators, and state-owned companies. So in order for us to work jointly, we need to get that proper mandate from the government. Okay. This is the problem as defined by the department, and this is the delivery model that will be used to resolve the problem. It's not that we're going to the cabinet and trying to second guess what Adam as indicated, just that we are recognizing that the problem is much broader than the department of health. Chairperson, I think that's my last thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honourable members, I have time now. Thank you. only come down to electricity distribution. I mean, what is clear is that there's a number of perverse incentives in terms of our current institutional makeup that is preventing us from actually dealing with this problem in a comprehensive way. The first perverse incentive, which I think was which was kind of brought on by our first approach, was to push for the rest. Now the problem with that though is that a number of municipalities, I think, saw this coming down the line, said we're going to have to transfer our assets, so why must we invest in those assets now? And I think that that has led to this kind of backlog accruing in such a way. But clearly the incentive structure there was wrong, and we have to deal with that mess now. So that's the first thing we have to deal with. The second one is that if municipalities are entirely in charge of distribution and get the majority of their revenue, which is the case in many municipalities, then there's a perverse incentive to not push for energy efficiency within municipalities because they're generating most of their revenue from electricity sales. But clearly that has to be changed as well. But in order to do that, we have to look at how we fund local governments differently. I mean, clearly this is a model from before, whereby we had cheap electricity. Municipalities saw this as a huge cash cow and used this to cross-subsidize other services. This is no longer the case and can no longer carry on, even though municipalities seem to be living in this kind of virtual world where they think that they can continue to hike up the prices and you know, that there won't be a response from consumers. Clearly, this is not a sustainable model in the future. So we have to relook at how local government is funded. We have to look at, and perhaps pressure needs to be put on municipalities to say, well, maybe you need to hike up the prices that you charge for other services in your municipality. Electricity can no longer be seen as a cash cow for municipalities, and that we need to address. But how do we do this? Because the thing is that what we saw in the whole rest of that was that municipalities are saying it's our constitutional right to be able to distribute electricity and to therefore be able to charge and put the markup that we choose to put on that. Minister would publish guidelines, but many times municipalities would say, well, we don't take your guidelines, we still can put the kind of markup we want to put on there. I think where this can come in, though, and perhaps Minister will speak to it when it comes to it, is that they do have, as my colleague said, the power of the licensing. And perhaps this should be saying to municipalities, if you are not going to invest in your distribution network, if we are not seeing an adequate investment in this, then your license can be revoked. At least having that threat hanging over them, because I don't think we ever have actually used that. And perhaps that is a threat that should be used in something. But in some cases, though, and I'll be interested to you as well, I think that in some cases, local municipalities, small municipalities, are simply not viable to be licensed as a distributor because they don't have all the technical staff. They're too small to actually run the distribution services themselves. And so perhaps what we should be looking at in those instances is grouping together a number of municipalities and actually running it as a single entity. And perhaps you're looking at bringing in another company that can be a wider company if they can't do that job. So I'll be interested to hear your comments on those particular issues. And I'll leave it there for now, but I'll certainly will say. Oh, no, one more question, though. The other one, when we talk about the backlog in maintenance at the moment, we talk about 27 billion rand or so. Now, the point was raised by Mr. De Beer that we have a distribution network that is not adequately configured to deal with the kinds of challenges, the energy challenges that the 21st century is going to bring, particularly stuff such as net metering, so that we can actually move forward in terms of households also producing energy. So my issue is that let's not just talk about the maintenance backlog. I also want to know what the figures are in terms of building distribution networks throughout the
and there is a lot of progress already made by NERSC in terms of implementing the MIT decree in terms of additional plastic for distribution. I would say the option of number four, and the presenter indicated that they will look at it, needs to be much more seriously with that. Should be that it, the learned students that it, on the longer term should be much more seriously considered. I think that's a much better option. It takes away the burden from the consumer in paying for capital expenditure. Of course, there's a user end payment that consumers realize, and that I would recommend that they not be paying for interest on loans and not for capital expenditure, and that we have a much longer, long-term plan in terms of finances. Then in terms of the state of readiness for municipalities to address the problem, we've seen the Auditor General's report the last few days. I don't think municipalities are up to it anymore. It is simply indication of incompetence and mismanaged by municipalities. I'm not sure how they will deal with that loss, and I fully agree with my colleague Mark Salem that we have to look at the institutional framework. How should municipalities be funded? And that brings me to the last point that I'd like to make, Chair. In terms of the state of readiness of the Development Bank of South Africa as a finance institution, that indicated to our finance committee that they would be able and perhaps prepared and even technically prepared as an implementation agent to assist municipalities to recover the resources. And I think those are the correct options that you should be looking at. I believe they indicated that they will be able to help funds between as municipalities. I've written some letters to the Development Bank of South Africa in terms of infrastructure decay, student verification work, etc. But I think the focus could be, and I've made this point at the Finance Committee, that they should be looking at the distribution in terms of how can they assist municipalities. And I think that could also be a step forward. I'm delighted to hear in terms of municipalities because it's part of the bigger problem. We have to get municipalities to be financially viable, as my colleagues indicated. And I think serious interventions are needed. And I'm very delighted to say that I fully agree with the Minister of Finance who indicated that in terms of the procurement process, there will be a procurement oversight unit, and those are the steps that we need to do. Perhaps we should look into establishing a distribution oversight unit. How can we address the backlog? Because it's simply costing the country money, it's simply costing consumers more money because we have losses on the network and they do pay more.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm John Kenneth. I'm a member of COSTA from Parliament today. And I just wanted to come back to the issue around finances and the like. And while it's certainly true here that there will be loans to municipalities, I think when we've seen the municipal infrastructure problems that we've had, that throwing money at the problem itself is not actually going to address the problem. And the OR Timber District Municipality, who I spent the time with during the course of last week, returned 560 million rand to the municipal infrastructure block because it wasn't able to spend. It didn't have the technical capacity, the technical know-how to ensure that the tenders and the right procurement processes were taking place at the municipality to roll out infrastructure. And so I think we also need to be looking at the problem from the other perspective, from the municipality upwards. And it's how do we develop the technical capacity at a municipal level to ensure that not only are we able to run an effective electricity distribution, I'm part of the municipality sitting at the moment with an electrician from Port Elizabeth who's using his license to keep the town's electricity going. And so not only do we have to have that capacity at a technical level in terms of distribution, but also developing that capacity in terms of procurement. Because many of these, recirculation and distribution infrastructure needs a very technical, procurement process to ensure that municipalities are not wasting money and actually developing infrastructure that's going to meet the needs in the medium and long term as well. And so, I think we must be very cautious about just saying, we're going to provide, stopgap measures for municipalities. We definitely need to look at how we develop technical capacity
Thank you, Chairperson. Just some few questions. The first one would be on the license licensing conditions that have been stipulated by NERSEC in Palestine. Have you managed to establish whether the reason for non-compliance with the conditions of the license, and also try to establish from NERSEC in the instance where money has not been utilized for the purposes it was intended for, in this instance, talking about maintenance and investment in infrastructure. Have you managed to establish from NERSEC why they couldn't draw back the money the following year? Or is there just an assumption from NERSEC that the problem is just so huge and we're just to let it pass without drawing back the money? The second question, on the user pay principle, which I support, I just want to establish whether you did any modeling to establish whether the likely impact of financing the infrastructure investment from the tariff, and you feel that you're comfortable that users will be able to accommodate that type of increase in the light of the past increases that have been affected by ESCO. The other question would be, I think in our interaction with National Treasury, at one stage, National Treasury indicated that there was almost an amount of 7.7 billion that was so. That was the surplus that was generated by municipalities in terms of electricity provision. Have you managed to interact with folks and municipalities to establish how this money was utilized and whether it was utilized for electricity related services? The last question would be on you said in your presentation you said red one. That red one one after 18 months, I think roughly around 2005. Would you be able to provide us with the reasons why this one wound up even before the cabinet decision was taken?
Thank you.
I indicated phase one of our Adam testing of the delivered model. Chair, I was avoiding going into too much detail, but however, I can mention that part of the module is to establish any committee that will help ourselves, will help DBSK, will help each and every individual municipality. In some instances, they will be grouped together, but the point is that the money will not move from one government institution to municipality and wait for the report. There will be a committee that will monitor progress. The funds will be deferred on presentation of the second phase of the program. So it's not a matter of us taking the money that is done in the MIG allocation. There will be a proper team established. We understand that some municipalities do not have the facility to spend that money. So they will be using those teams that will be established. Chair, the other question was in relation to so there were many questions around the adequate skills within the municipalities and how the municipalities would be able to spend that money. But I have responded to that. The question came from different members. So the other question was in relation to the recommended option 4 and how will the user pay principle, I think, affordable for the user to repay that capital investment, because obviously a loan has been paid back. So we have not done a modeling exercise where we look at the impact of the term. However, the principle is that the loan will flow from those institutions that will be providing the loan. The national government, in the form of treasury, will provide a guarantee towards those loan institutions. From the regulator side and the tariff side of things, we expect that there will be provision for each and every recipient of the loan. There will be a provision within the tariff to make sure that these loan recipients are able to pay back the loan. But if they don't pay back, then it falls back to national treasury, it comes back to the federal, which is what we're trying to avoid from the onset. But to answer your question in terms of modeling of the impact on the tariff, no, that has not been done. I can take the point that we will be so, Honorable Pierre made an example of what is happening in the MIG allocation. But as I said, it's not a matter of throwing the money at the problem. It's after the municipality with the DSA and Shella working together to make sure that the project is resolved. Within the delivery model, one of the documents that each and every municipality is expected to sign going forward, the allocation that they receive from the tariff that is influenced for maintenance will be used for maintenance going forward. Yes, I can say that in the past it has not been the case. Some have not used that allocation for maintenance. They have diverted it to other activities. But as part of the delivery model, we expect to enter into agreement directly with the municipality. All the money that is used for maintenance from this point going forward should and will be used for that purpose. To answer the question on the license condition and the reason why they have not been complied. Well, again, the regulator is better placed, but I will answer from the policy perspective. I mean, the rules are clear, so they are not ambiguous. What has been happening is that certain municipalities will not meet some of the conditions. And our expectation from the National Department is that NERSA must then step in the form of financial penalties, which will ultimately lead to those licenses in the book. However, that has not been happening, and there are other sensitivities around why that has not been happening from the regulator's point of view. And what they have mentioned to us is that we majority of the municipalities are in financial dire expense. So for you to impose an additional financial penalty, it is not solving the problem. We need to solve the problem. We have created with the regulator on this point, and they are, my understanding is that they are consulting with them, they are engaging them, trying to address the core of the problem instead of coming with penalty and meeting them where it has been. The other issue was the question of about 7 billion that was raised from the electricity and what had happened to the fund. I must admit, I have not heard of such a fund before. But as I indicated, I mean, Treasury was part of the interdepartmental team, and that was never brought to the table. So the recommendations that we are working on is those 5 options as presented, and we have recommended option 4 to go with. The 7 billion has not at any point been brought to the table. It's the first time we have. The reason why Red One was wound up even before the Kenyan decision of September 26th. When you look at, and I indicated in my presentation that the municipality has certain constitutional power. In the case of Red One, unfortunately, those powers were used to make certain decisions which effectively reversed the efforts by the EDI holdings to establish Red One. And that's in a nutshell what they took decision to reverse. As to why they did that, I'm sure, I saw they are also presenting the Secretary of Commerce a little bit of a position to respond to the question why did they take that decision to reverse the pension process. So I think I've answered all that I can.
If I have another 10-4 to say, and a couple of in the rate of the can I just I see our population is growing in leaps and bounds, but if you could just make sure that all of the members get the tea.
No.
With that, I'm trying to answer one member can I have a couple of can you break for
I'll be able to talk to the active partner be the solution to really getting something done. And also talk a little bit about the MOU that we signed between COFTA and ourselves at ESPRO, which happened on the 6th of June this year. Honorable Chairman, I've also, in terms of the presentation, I think you have a number of slides, but I'm not going to cover all of them in terms of the presentation. I will just go to those that I think I would like to talk to, but do feel free to ask me questions or the ones that are in your presentation, but not necessarily seen on the screen. Now, I just want to talk about ESCOM's role, or a little bit of history on what ESCOM did as far as the industry restructuring is concerned, and really just to say that, you know, ESCOM is a very obedient type, if I may say that. We are very obedient, because when it came to the restructuring of the industry, one of the first things that we did was to go and reorganize the whole of distribution to make sure that it is aligned to the REDD, in preparation to the REDD. So we ended up having six regions. In fact, we had a huge program that was reorganizing or reconfiguring distribution from the seven regions that we had at the time. And also, we do have a history of where we come from in terms of the regions. But I would just stick to the ones that were really geared up to getting to the REDD. And we reorganized ourselves. We were also part of the formation of REDD 1, which I've talked about during this earlier. So as I said, you can see that we are really an obedient child. We really put in a lot of resources there. We organize ourselves. And we really feel that as an organization, we cannot divorce ourselves from the industry. And we have to make sure that we commit to playing a very active role in resolving the issues of the industry. And you will see a bit later that we also recently signed an MOU with COFTA, which is really focusing on adult and municipality. And that initiative, by the way, is something that we also spoke about with EDI Holdings at the time. Because one of the things that we used to have with EDI Holdings was what we call a 5 for 5, where we would meet with the seniors of EDI Holdings. In fact, Javier was part of that team at the time. And one of the things that we spoke about was that we actually need to do something practical now, because, you know, if you go to the slide that was shown by Dr. Javier for Sanity, there was a long list of, you know, analysis, summits, and this and that. I think I counted about 8 of those, which shows that, you know, the information, in fact, by the way, in those, I'm sure, didn't change. It didn't get any better or refined. It's just confirmed. So just a reconfirmation. So what we spoke about was that we actually need to go and do something that is going to be more practical in terms of dealing with the issues and the challenges of the industry. And currently in distribution or in ESCOM, we have reorganized ourselves again. We are now, as most of you would know, organized in, aligned to the current 9 provinces. So we've got 9 provincial offices at the distribution level. We are capacitating or in the process of capacitating those structures. And one of the things that we have taken care of in our structures is to say that if you look at our distribution mandate, as you can see on the board, one of the key pillars of it is that we have to play a very active role in the distribution industry in terms of partnering with other distribution partners to make sure that we deal with the issues of the industry. So we are capacitating our structure so that we are able to have that kind of capacity in the different provinces that I've already mentioned, so that we are able to deliver as far as that is concerned. Now, if I can just very quickly and briefly share with you some of our statistics. This is at the end of March 2012. That is the type of network that we have. 311,000 kilometers of distribution lines. We've got 47,000 kilometers of distribution lines, and we also have about 40,000 employees currently in distribution with the reorganization that we've done. I think a very critical service delivery issue there is around electrification, and I'm pleased to say that we have electrified a total of 4.2 million homes since inception in 1991. So there is quite a number of work, a lot of work that has been done from that time. again, is just to amplify the 27 billion plus backlog that we talked about or heard about a bit earlier in the presentation, to say that we are part of that backlog as well as ESCOM. In terms of how we are planning to address the refurbishment backlog, if you look at our corporate plan, which is a document that was put together with the restructuring that I mentioned earlier, we actually put a plan that looking forward from 2010-2011 to 2016-17, it's looking at spending at least 68 billion rand in the capital budget just on the distribution side. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the generation and the transmission, because they also have their own portion of money that they are going to be spending. And there was an issue that was raised that you can't just keep on spending money just to patch the distribution infrastructure. You also need to look forward in terms of, you know, other technologies and that. And I'm pleased to say that part of that budget actually looks at that in the distribution environment. We look at direct customers. So in other words, the 68 billion that is there is talking to your direct customers, is talking to strengthening, is talking to refurbishment, is talking to continuous business improvement, is talking to speed metering. So I can't actually give a breakdown of where that money is going to go, but in essence, there is quite a lot of investment or reinvestment into the infrastructure. Now, the other point that I want to make is that, you know, if you look at the way that ESCOM is structured, obviously we don't have the challenges that the municipalities have in terms of having other services that we have to subsidize. So we don't have that issue. So the money that we reinvest in our infrastructure. So that is quite clear. And I think if you look at the condition of our network, by and large, you will find that generally it's in a very good condition. And you will find, though, that there will be pockets, you know, of areas where we have poor plant performance, particularly those areas that we inherited from the old homeland, you know, like the trans guys, the cis guys, the vendors, and so on. We actually find that the standards of those networks are not the same as ESCOM, and therefore we actually needed to really spend a lot of money to put them up to the same level of quality of network that we have at ESCOM distribution level. If you look at our maintenance plans as well, I mean, that is something that we also monitor the maintenance. We look at how much maintenance are we doing, because we spend quite a lot of money on maintenance budget. We also spend quite a lot of money on the capital side. But you can see that our maintenance plan currently, we are sitting at about 95%. In fact, that figure, that the most recent figure is about 98% of maintenance and that we do. And at the bottom there, that table shows you how much money I'm going to be spending just on the maintenance budget, you know, going forward. So this is a different figure from the 68 billion figure that I'm showing. And some of the things that are really driving our costs is basically our low voltage maintenance philosophy. It is common knowledge that, you know, in the past we have actually been not focusing on the low voltage side of the of our network, and that is an area where we have been having some challenges as far as customer satisfaction is concerned. And in the last 5 to 6 years, we actually put together a maintenance philosophy, and we are now proactively looking at our LV network to make sure that we attend to that side of the business. The increase in electrification customers, which I've already mentioned, you can see that we've got a lot of electrification customers that we have added to the network in the last, since 1991. And then the other point, which is important, which supports now the growth that we're seeing, is that we have in our business plan put together what we call the customer network centers, or you might be familiar with the technical services centers, or maybe the old depots, depending on how old you are, so you'll be able to recognize what I'm talking about, but it's all the same thing. The technical, the depots or the technical services centers, or what we now call the customer network centers, that is basically where we service the customers from. So it's the customer base that we have, the network people that are consuming from us, and we have little depots in strategic places that basically go out there to fix the faults when they are coming. So one of our getting more and more customers, and the infrastructure is getting bigger and bigger. And therefore, we need to have people on the ground who are able to deal with the challenges there. So those are basically what I would call the key drivers for us having to invest in this network. Now, on the EDI restructuring path, I don't really need to go through the slide. It's already been talked about. You know, that the EDI holding was shut down in 2010. And at least the announcement was made in late 2010, and subsequently EDI Holdings was then closed down. But the question is, did the problems of the industry go away? They actually didn't. And if you go back to the case for EDI restructuring, you know, the whole issue of you know, the things that we're talking about today, the whole issue of the infrastructure, the tariffs that are different, and the education backlog that we have in the country, all of those things, you know, security, those issues are still here. We heard just the other day when the AG, the Auditor General, spoke about the municipalities and their performance. I mean, we all heard and the report just the other day. So it just confirms, you know, what we already know. But the key issue, I think, is that we still have challenges where municipalities, we know, I think it was also mentioned earlier, that when we all knew that we were going to be moving to the red at the time, the investment in the infrastructure then diminished in certain areas. And therefore, we find ourselves with a backlog of 27 billion plus, and that we're sitting with now, which we now need to deal with as the industry as a whole. And also, if you look at some of the reports that we have seen from COPTA and also from SAGA, you know, they confirm what the Auditor General reported the other day. They also confirm that, you know, there are really serious issues around leadership, serious issues around governance. And also, you know, if I look at the 14 billion rand that was quoted as irregular spending, I mean, that is half of the bank of the backlog that we have saw. Or half of the money that is required to deal with the backlog, and maybe the third now is the backlog is going up and up. So I think if I look at this, you know, as an ordinary South African, I think it's really embarrassing to have you know, a situation where money like this could have been used somewhere else and is actually not getting there. The other point is that the issue of you know, resources in the whole industry also needs to be looked at. It is a challenge. And SAGA also has, you know, a lot of work has been done. I think this is the point with the slide here, that a lot of analysis has been done. And, you know, going forward with more analysis is really not going to change the situation around. What is going to change the thing is that we do something about it. And maybe just one or two points that I really wanted to touch on regarding the EDI restructuring and some of the key issues that were left unresolved, you know, just to remind ourselves what some of those were, you know, the asset valuation and compensation framework, the framework for converting tariffs, tax exemption, you know, things like those were never really resolved. And I think they did cause a lot of concern as far as the parent companies were concerned. So those are some of the issues that probably led to or contributed some to the demise of the EDI restructuring process. However, what can we do, you know, going forward? And I think this is an area where I just want to say that part of what we need really is just, we need a pragmatic approach. That's really what we need to do. We need to recognize that we have all the information that we need about the industry for us to do something. And probably we have the money also shared. I mean, if you look at the 14 billion that I mentioned, well, it's not my number, by the way, it's the Auditor General's number. If you look at the number, an indication that probably the money is there as well. You know, we can pull resources. In fact, one of the things that we also learned with electrification specifically is that if we were to pool our resources, you know, as an industry, as both ESCOM and the municipalities, well, if you really think about it, who is the distribution industry? ESCOM and the municipalities. if we were to pull our resources there, I think also from a commercial point of view, we could really get a lot of discount. Right? Just buying equipment, you know, to be installed and that sort of thing. We could actually really, we have a huge power to leverage if we all get together. And the whole concept around what can we do that is practical, that is pragmatic, is very around looking at the resources. What do we have? What power do we have? And really try and pull that together and make sure that we all share the same concerns, we all share the same vision. And I think that one is probably more important than looking at it as individuals. Because when you start looking at it as individuals, then you start wanting to protect your own self and all of those things. And maybe look at ourselves as, you know, we are entities that have certain capabilities, we are entities that have, you know, certain skills, and who are really entities that can really solve the problems, you know, that are in the industry. And if we utilize our strengths and our capabilities by pulling them, you know, pull everything together, I think we could be able to really heal from inside, if I can use that term. And also, I think somewhere there was a suggestion that some municipalities that are smaller could be consolidated, you know, to form one big one, and maybe, you know, one metro could actually adopt those and maybe take them over in future. And that is an option that is practical that can be done. And in that process, really, what needs to dominate is that we need to look at what is happening in the industry, the service delivery process that we see. I mean, if I live in a certain area and I see things happening all the time, would I be happy to be in that kind of situation? I think those are some of the deep questions that we should be asking ourselves as individuals. And really what we're saying with active partnering is that it is a process or an approach that could really work if we really define and also acknowledge and we are aware of the fact that, you know, if we are very clear about what is the thing that is burning us and how do we need to get out of it or what we need to do as an end to get to the end state, I think it is something where that we can work together as an industry to make sure that we get ourselves out of the situation that we are. And I'm sure that, you know, as I said, that it would be not so difficult really to get the money, because we can see that the money is there somewhere. And again, the whole active partnering concept, I think, it is really just a model for joint service delivery. And really saying that we work with partners in the industry, and it doesn't have to be just the industry key players, for example, the municipalities and the and ESCOM, but it could be other parties that are interested in, you know, in making a contribution, and make sure that we've got a team of people that are there who would be able to try and work towards solving the problems of the industry. And I think if you look at where we are now, you know, we spend a lot of energy and a lot of time looking at how we can get the whole industry consolidated. But after those many years, 20 years, just about, and we never really got to some solution. In fact, it then begs the question, do we really have a plan for large-scale restructuring? I don't know. I don't have that answer. But if I look at history, history actually tells me that we probably don't have the appetite for that. But we are aware that we need to deal with the issue. I've already spoken to the possibility of getting some entities, you know, that are really vulnerable and struggling, so that we can get some consolidation taking place in the industry. You know, some of the other issues, you know, around the transfer of assets, I think, Prof. Wendy spoke, he did talk about some kind of models for transferring of assets. I think that is something that we probably need to, you know, to work around. But for me, I think that the fact that we spent 20 years trying to form a structure that is going to deal with the issue is probably not where our energy should be focused now, but we should really be focusing on how do we then use other plans to work, how do we make it work. And I think there was also a suggestion that was made that we should have a an oversight committee for distribution, and maybe that is something that needs to be there, some kind of mechanism to make sure that we enable this this thing to happen. Without spending too much time, I think share what I really would like to just emphasize here with this slide is the fact that if you look at the whole active partnership process or model, basically what the framework is suggesting is that the first thing you need to have is to have a common vision. I mean, that is not rocket science there. And, you know, we need a structure that is flexible enough, you know, to respond to the challenges, but also a structure that is really going to get things done. A structure that is adaptable and a structure that is scalable. Now, one of the things that we spoke about with EDI Holdings before they closed down was that we probably just need to identify one or two or three new strategies that are really starting and going to help them. And then we have a winning solution, you know, that can be an example that we can use. Unfortunately, we never got to that stage, although we have now come around to that same point again with COPTA. And if I can just have some of the services or the potential offering, if you look at the active partnering, and I think if you just look at that slide, you'll see that we can look at leadership development, which is something that came out of the audit agenda report, and we can look at maintenance and operations, the collection of money, pricing and tariff structures. In fact, one of the things that we've learned is that some of the reasons that there is under collection of money from the municipalities is that they under price their cost. So the whole issue of how they design their tariffs becomes an issue. Technical standards, in fact, one of the very good work I think that came out of the whole EDI restructuring process for me, you know, was really getting some conversions into the technical standards. You know, at some point we actually got together as the technical industry or the distribution industry, and we looked at our standards, and we had a committee that was actually formed, you know, to look at how do we get our standards put together and aligned to, you know, the same common standards. Because at the end of the day, we are serving, you know, the same customer base. In fact, in some instances, you'll find that you go here next door, the city of Cape Town, and then, you know, they've got a different bill to the person right next door who is served by Eskom. So those are the things that need to be addressed. But this basically just gives us a suite of potential offerings that we could have if we went for this joint partnership. Honorable Chair, you did say that you really would like to see some recommendations, and I think where we could start is, for instance, to get some participants, you know, coming right across the spectrum, should have, you know, DOE, sorry, I should have said DOE, they're not DOE. I'm sorry that I speak it now, but apologies, but it should be DOE. What we should have is NERSA, ESCOM, SAMSA, you know, all the different stakeholders. And I think here it's very important to probably in terms of find some kind of process of nominating who the chair should be. It shouldn't be an entity that may be seen as biased. In fact, if I may again go and borrow what Professor said, that ESCOM is not the enemy. Probably in this case, ESCOM is not the right person to chair that. You know, it needs to be somebody who is, you know, credible, if I, for lack of a better word, you know, to be chairing this so that this is some kind of steering committee that is going to take this forward. And basically, this could have some sort of virtual industry strategy office where we start looking at what are the key issues, where do we start in terms of mobilizing all our resources and getting things done. And this really is some capacity that can be leveraged from the whole industry, where we basically have the architect who is basically going to define the whole overall strategy in terms of what is already available, and look at how we can actually of scholars and throughout the leaders. It is quite daring, I think, Chairman, you know, if you could just allow me to say that it may look very, very ambitious, but surely we've got to start from somewhere. We have to be very ambitious, and we have to really believe that things can happen. And I think looking into the future, you could really think about having an article in 2017 that reads as that one does the South. The South Africa's electricity industry strategic partnership has managed to restore service delivery, reduce manufacturing costs by 10%, resulting in 20% increase in indirect investment and 8% reduction in unemployment. Wouldn't that be wonderful to have something like this?
I say maybe I might.
So there's a very nice article for the So if I may just conclude, then I did want to say that on the 6th of June, we actually had a function in this building with COFTA and a number of other partners as well, where we signed this memorandum of understanding on business adopting society, which basically is a document that says, let us find ways of working together as governments, as state-owned companies. There's another error here, please don't beat me up. But we are now state-owned companies and not entities. And really just coming together and working with other people in the private sector, getting together and really having some critical conversations around going forward. How do we take this industry going forward? We really need to restructure it, probably some of the things that we spoke about. And as I've already mentioned, we did have some discussions with the CDR Holdings before they closed down to say that let us look at something really practical that we can do together. And I really would like to end up on this point to say that it is possible, really. We need to be very practical at this point, and we need to stop paralyzing ourselves with all the analysis, because the information is out there, and I don't think that it's going to change much by analyzing any further. Thank you very much, Chair, for making my ideas. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honourable members, I just realized that we were between 26 and 80 presentations in our next meeting. So this time I'm going to be tight for time, because we would definitely agree, all of us, that we should give presentations as much time as possible, because only thereafter we'll apply our money. The basic reason for that is to influence us, so that we can influence the input and the outcome. I have quite known that over the 10 pictures. Honorable Chair, Honorable Member of the Group of Fellow Committee, just to start the matter of introduction, my name is Ongama Mandalo, and I'm representing COFTA today. And it's about saying, COFTA is deep. I'm representing the newly established entity called Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, which reports to the Minister of Cooperative Government and National Affairs. And
I'll give it a few minutes just to take us through, Mr. Walter. Yeah. When it was explained to us in February, the mayor and a couple of people were not around. So please, it's part of the thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to save time, I think the history and background on the construction process has already been dealt with properly and thoroughly. And I just want to acknowledge, Chair, that we as COFTA recognize that indeed local government faces numerous challenges. And I think also once again, to save time, I'm not going to get into the details of all those challenges, but I would really like to highlight The first thing also, Chair, that I would like to emphasize is that it is important to know that different categories of municipalities face different challenges. And we therefore, this requires of us that the strategies and interventions that we consider and will come up with should take that into consideration. And I will, at this point, just categorize municipalities into, firstly, into these two urban municipalities, which, as far as we are concerned, continue to face challenges arising from urbanization, you know, the high growth in population in urban areas. It's important to note that the 12 major cities in the country collectively are home to approximately 42% of the country's total population, and therefore it's a significant percentage, and we therefore need to consider that. And this trend of urbanization is projected to continue. And our analysis has found that urban municipalities have high levels of capital expenditure, high levels of economic activity, but relatively low backlog in terms of infrastructure, in terms of infrastructure development. And expenditure on new infrastructure and this growth is mostly related to economic growth. And I'd like to emphasize that the challenges of urbanization and economic growth, however, put pressure on infrastructure investment requirements in these municipalities. On the other hand, the rural municipalities have the biggest backlog, have the highest degree of economic disadvantage, have the biggest capital finance gaps, have low technical and management capacity, are hugely dependent on fiscal transfers, and have the lowest level of viability. While there are just 12 major cities account for 47% of the population, the rural municipalities, however, also account for a significant portion of the population, which is 27%. And one of the biggest challenges is found that because of all these disadvantages that I've raised above, they are unable to attract and retain skilled personnel. And as indicated earlier, the kind of, so we can't find a one-size-fits-all intervention to this problem. And for rural municipalities in particular, we believe that they need critical, comprehensive infrastructure delivery and operating assistance. So in terms of ensuring that we are able to support these municipalities, we need a much more holistic approach and comprehensive infrastructure development operational support that must be provided. But just quickly to just identify some other issues that it's important to recognize, and while they are not directly just only linked to electricity distribution, but they affect service delivery generally. And unless we deal with all these methods, then we will not be able to also deal with the issue of electricity distribution. And these include issues of government favor. So we are raising this because we acknowledge them as COPTA, that these are issues that we need to deal with as part of our support to municipalities. Issues of government failures, issues of lack of adequate technical capacity, issue of funding and fiscal issues, both at a national level but also within municipalities is a problem, and we therefore need to come up with support mechanisms to deal with that. But I know that when we talk about institutional issues, and I like the use of words by Ayanda, where she prefers to move away from the structure. And I noted that in her presentation she was talking about the transformation of the industry. And it's possibly something that we should also consider. So that, of course, there's a fatigue around issues of structure, but there's a need to transform the industry if we want to get to the level that we want. And unfortunately, as we do that transformation, we we also need to look at issues of institutional coordination and alignment, not only between the various fields of government, but also at national level. It's unfortunately a reality that even at national departments, we are not talking the same language, and we are not driving the process together. And these are issues that we will need to look at as well if we want to address and figure out these issues. And we think that we therefore need a multi-pronged, multidisciplinary response to all these challenges. And we emphasize the issue of improved institutional coordination, as I indicated earlier, and to ensure support provided to municipalities is more effective in scope and targeted. And we don't have each institution going to municipalities and trying to provide support outside other support provided by other institutions. Quickly to me, and I'm really, it's not a long presentation, zooming at the issues of the fiscal issues that we believe that needs to be addressed. And recognizing that even municipal's own contribution to capital expenditure from 2006 to 2012, in 6 years, that has shrunk by about 50% of the total capital spending. And we obviously need to look at what is causing all that. And municipalities need to pay attention to revenue management and need to ensure integrity of the billing information, the accuracy of the billing system, and ability to collect. These are all issues that you're going to find that unless the municipality deals with itself or with our support, whatever we do at sub-local level or sub-national level is not going to bear fruit. So it's the issue of the comprehensive approach to it. And we noted recently that the consumer debt is pretty high, very high. I mean, in December 2010, municipalities were owed a total of 62.3 billion, which represents an increase of 10.8% from the same month in 2009. Currently, we are sitting at 76 billion rand. And of that amount, approximately about 12.7 billion rand of debt to electricity. So if we can't, if municipalities can't recover that money, then we certainly need to find interventions to make sure that we are able to recover all that money that is owed to municipalities. Colleagues before me have spoken to the issue of underpricing of services. And generally, tariff setting is a problem in many municipalities. And one of the biggest issues as well is the issue of forward planning of capital budgets by municipalities, generally poor. And it results to a lot of underspending. And we know what the auditor general has resulted. And we all conscious, I think one of the members even spoke about over 500 million rand that had to be returned by OR Campbell, which is a massive backlog. So it's the issue of really forward planning, but also issue of capacity, lack of capacity by these municipalities to procure properly. And we need to come up with solutions to all those issues. And lastly, around the fiscal issues, is the quality of budgeting by these municipalities. In 2010-2011, only 123 municipalities had budgets that were adequately financed. And then you ask yourself, if they can't even budget they can't have a proper budget, I mean, when do they expect to get funding? Third, to go towards concluding, we've highlighted some issues regarding electricity that we believe need to be addressed. And most of the presenters before me have spoken about the fact that the government decided not to create rents but they still need to address quite infrastructure maintenance and risk management capacity. The issue, we believe that we need to prioritize the rehabilitation of existing infrastructure, particularly when it comes to electricity. And there's this issue that keeps on popping up, that Eskom services 48.6% of domestic customers, and the fact that municipalities are always complaining that that's the source of revenue that they can utilize. It's an issue that we can't run away from, but we must be decisive about it. So it's unfortunately something that we need also to deal with. And there is a need to address the issue of using electricity cut-off as a credit control measure. And it's becoming right that municipalities cut off electricity when a consumer is owing on water. It's becoming a problem within municipalities. And the question that we should be asking ourselves is that right? Should we promote that? Another issue that people are talking about is the need for increased investment in new and existing infrastructure. I think we all agree on that. And as well as the last issue that address high non-technical electricity losses. And the international norm is 3.5%. And we should be asking ourselves, where are we sitting in relation to that international norm? The last second slide check. Also, the fact that currently maintenance, local government is regarded as a discretionary expenditure. Can we continue to, can we sustain that? And we can have the framework, but if municipalities do not deal or do not implement that framework or guideline, what should we do? Should we continue to just leave it as a discretionary issue? Another issue that was raised earlier is the need to find measures to protect poor households from price increases. I mean, I think we all should agree about that and find measures to do that. And one of the sticking points, I think also around within government that there doesn't seem to be an agreement on, is the issue of the possibility of municipalities ring-fencing the finances of electricity. Why should electricity, which is the good that lays the golden egg, be compromised? So we need to ensure that municipalities also just take as much care of electricity or other services to make sure that they bring the desired income. We must also deal with the issue of misalignment between the financial year of municipality and the rest of government. And it is an issue because provincial and national government and other institutions, the financial year ends in March, and municipality financial year ends in June. And the issue of monitoring of ensuring accountability becomes a problem. And we therefore, and as well as the issue of planning. So we need to make sure that we look, I think it's one of those issues that need to be looked at, that are institutional or that are kind of government issues within the various spheres of government. But lastly, we must also look at the possible misalignments in the respective roles, I think I've raised this point earlier, played by the various national institutions in the electricity value chain. I spoke about municipal infrastructure support agents, which is a new agency that has been established by government to support municipalities. And it was recently established, I think, in May of this year, whose mandate really is to focus on providing skills development and technical support to municipalities for infrastructure development and as MISA, we are in the process of establishing a dedicated unit focusing on supporting municipalities on energy issues. realization of the electrification program. And it is based on the argument that we have with ESCOM that we believe that we will be able to even address this issue. So the argument between ESCOM and COPTA has come at an appropriate time. And one of MISA's priorities is to improve the skills of existing municipal technical officials, as well as infuse new capacity in municipalities. I mean, we can implement stopgap measures, but if we do not build the capacity of the municipalities for their own long-term sustainability, we will not achieve turning the municipalities around. In conclusion, once again, we welcome this initiative. I know that the colleague from Department of Energy spoke about the tax team. I would like you to support, you know, I've just used the word tax team here, but I think we support the recommendation by ESCOM that we need a multidisciplinary team. And I would even go further as to say that at two levels, both at technical level as well as political level, which should look at all the issues of transforming the distribution industry. In fact, we could talk about of dealing with the challenges that are faced by the electricity industry generally. And that team, particularly the political team, should be held to account to Parliament on a regular basis, so that we can see if progress is being done. Thank you, Chair.
Enforcing compliance and performance and take a copy.
saying that our other functions are not so important. The first one, where many people have asked, is what is it that we do or don't do when licensees don't comply? Now, there's a section in the Electricity Improvement Act that says that when licensees don't comply, we must do something. And it says that when a licensee does not comply with some text, the section is the revocation of the license. I think many people have asked about the revocation of the license. NASA, with the current legislation, cannot revoke a license unless the licensee applies for that revocation. When they have applied for that revocation, they must also indicate if they are saying that they are revoking it because it's uneconomically viable or they can't continue to do this field of those services. They must give them a 12-month answer. So NASA has not revoked licenses because the licensees must apply for that. In the one that was asked, how did you revoke red one? Red one applied for the revocation of the license, so we could. If, for some reason, NASA believes that the license is to revoke, the next section says you must go and get an order of an application. For me to read it, it says it's an application on non-stop motion at the High Court to give the reasons why we believe that this license should be revoked. The second part of the part about compliance and enforcement of compliance to NASA and what it does is when there's an entity or a licensee that does not meet its license conditions, the second question that talks about that is the one that talks about contravention of license. So when a licensee does not meet its license conditions, the list that we give, the best we can do is to give them a notice to say that you're not meeting your license conditions, and here's a notice after 30 days or whatever the number of days that you deem reasonable, you must comply. If they don't comply, we then move to the next step of we can give them a fine. Now, what the Department of Energy has indicated about fining municipalities that don't comply is partly true, but that's not the reason why we have not given fines. The reason why we have not given fines, even if we can fine the municipality, that 2 million rand that we are allowed to fine per day, if the municipalities are not paying that fine, it is not an offense. So there is nothing that we can do. Not paying is not an offense. Not paying NASA's fine is not a criminal offense. So we can find what we like, but we will not pay, and there's nothing that we can do. And that is the fundamental problem. But however, having all of those limitations in our legislation, there are other methods that we have used of enforcing them. And I think it's pretty much the same method that the Auditor General has used, telling the public what is the problem. Because even the Auditor General has those limitations in his own legislation about what he can enforce and what he can't enforce. So we also find ways around that to enforce it. And a lot of the service delivery issues and pricing issues that have arisen take us to the next step of our function, the one of resolving disputes with customers and the licensees. And an increase in those complaints will support many of the municipalities, in fact, mainly on the tariff, to start towing the line, because there's that complaint and the come over and then call the municipality, and the resolution time of that becomes shorter because we say you are going to do this, and when there's an involvement of lawyers who will be training for the customer, the resolution of these issues becomes much easier. But as the legislation stands, what we are doing is the best we can do. If you expect us to revoke licenses, the answer is we can't. The licensee must apply if you want. After you do that, you must go to the High Court, and want us to find them, we can find them, but if they don't pay, it's not their time, so we'll continue to do that. But on that note, I'll ask my colleagues to then talk about the
yes, thank you, Mr. Bukula, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Committee. My name is Ronald Chauk, as Mr. Bukula introduced me, so I'll take over from here. So the next slide, it's about the regulation of the electricity distribution industry. NASA has already licensed 189 licenses on the distribution side, of which comprises of 175 municipalities, ESCOM, as well as 13 private distributors. Most of the regulation which we undertake is in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act. in addition to Section 27 of the Act, we impose specific obligations to the players within the distribution sector for them to conform with the set regulatory requirements relating to operations, quality of supply and other standards, of which some of them will also summarize them within our national South African code. And we also issue licenses which comes with conditions which our players, which include ESCOM and municipalities, should abide by. And then we also deal with the issue, as Mr. Bukula highlighted, of regulating the prices and the tariffs. So in the tariff determination processes, we consider key parameters, which include activities related to the contractors of the municipalities, and we determine the appropriate ranges which will enable us to determine an equitable and reasonable and fair tariff in line with the cost structure of the licensee. And that happens from the municipal side as well as from ESCOM as it stands. So we use a number of different available industry statistics, including the inflation figures as issued by National Treasury, as well as making sure that the salary levels we utilize the numbers as determined from the Minister of Finance medium-term budget policy statement. And then our tariffs by themselves, they are categorized in our determination into energy purchases, salaries, repairs, and other costs, as outlined in the slide. And then we also make sure that we utilize what we call the benchmark. In the benchmark, that's how we find that we come to determine the domestic, as well as the commercial and industrial tariffs. And then mostly we find that on the ESCOM side, the tariffs are mostly on the high voltage level side of the transmission, and then municipalities on megaplex tariff rate, as well as the customers. You find that there are different customer mixes for both municipalities and for ESCOM. And you find that the issue of cross-subsidization at ESCOM, it happens at its level, and then also at municipalities which are having a good combination of both the residential and industrial customers. They are able to plan the way in which they can undertake the cross-subsidization function. On the compliance side, as we are mandated by the Act, NERSA has already approved what we call a distribution compliance framework. Regardless of the limitations as outlined by Mr. Bukula, we do our part to ensure that we conduct continuous regular terminal audits to check the level of the conformance to the regulatory requirements by the licensee. That one, actually, we do the planning and we determine how many audits can we be able to undertake for a particular financial year, and then we engage our entities from there. However, we have came up with observations whereby we realized that there are a number of challenges in terms of how municipalities are giving us report back. We find that that most of them, they are not complying with their license conditions, and there are limitations to that as outlined. We realize that they don't comply with the South African Grid Code and other standards like the NRS 048 and NRS 047. And then some of them are also implementing not approved tariffs, as Mr. Bukula highlighted. And then we also have the challenge on the issue of the poor quality of services, electricity services being rendered due to the state of the electricity infrastructure at the most distributors in the municipal plant. And then there is another issue, as most of the other presenters highlighted, the challenge of the technical skills, whereby you find that some of the municipalities, mostly in the rural side, they are having challenges of not having competent and skilled personnel to be able to operate those electrical infrastructure and such. And there is a number of high level of customer complaints which are forwarded to NERSA due to the issue of licensee not complying to their license conditions. So we also did our analysis, and then as things stand, there are constraints and challenges within the electricity distribution space. So although in order to avoid reputation, as many members, many presenters have stated, challenge on the issue of legislation being not that much aligned. And then the electricity business in most municipalities, as Dr. Felipe highlighted, it's not all municipalities which have their electricity business being ring-fenced, so that those costs can be effectively and equitably allocated to address the electricity business for its smooth and sustainable operation. And then there are a number of challenges at the municipalities or municipal licenses, whereby we find that when we conduct the technical audit, most of them don't have what you can call formalized or structured maintenance practices, meaning that the practices which are happening there are not as uniform and holistic as they are supposed to be, to the extent that even if we can ask some of the licensees as to whether they have a maintenance policy or not, or a maintenance strategy, you find that they come short. They are unable to produce a document to say that this is how actually we conduct our maintenance, this is how much we invest in, and then this is how the routine as well as the intervals which we use to ensure that our networks are brought up to standard. And then the other challenge also is the issue that there is a need for the rationalization of tariffs which will lead to actually a harmonized tariff state. That one at the present moment we remain to strive to ensure that together with industry we pursue the objective of trying to rationalize the multiple tariffs which are existing in order to bring in orderly functioning tariffs and uniformity. There are also challenges, as Dr. Felipe has said about the summits which we have conducted on maintenance for the 2003 and 2008 one, whereby resolutions were taken out of those summits that the maintenance should play a core part. However, when we conduct our technical audit compliance, we find that the corrective action plans which licensees, mostly on the municipal side, are supposed to be effected, they are not being effected. And hence, we are hitting those challenges which I believe that in mapping out the solutions from my dissertation will come up with uniform and common direction on how should we address the shortfalls and the shortcomings which are existing from both the legislation and the regulatory plan. And then the backlog on maintenance remained at 27 billion in 2008 numbers in terms of the Adam report. However, as an updated figure of the Department of has been highlighted, that remains to be a key issue which we need to resolve. And then, on the draft regulatory reporting system that we were requested to report upon, there are issues on the legislative front, of which you will find that the Municipal System Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, as well as the Municipal Fiscal and Powers Act, under the control of the National Treasury, and the requirement of licensees to comply with the tariff related matters from NERSA, you find that there is a misalignment due to that issue of the financial year end of municipalities and ESCOM and other players within government having a 3-month misalignment. Then it has a burden on municipality side, which leads to information asymmetry, because you find that at other times municipalities are overburdened by different oversight bodies which require them to report on lesser for necessary information from different people and different institutions, and then it leads to municipalities having to submit a lot of information or same information to different players. And we need to find out a better way of how to address that. And then we try to make a recommendation my next slide about that. And then the other issues about how this oversight role on municipalities is undertaken. From COPTA, point of USA, the National Credit Department of Energy, Department of Labor, South Africa, and Bureau of Standards, as well as NERSA. And you might find that our oversight role might even lead to unintended consequences, whereby municipalities end up saying that should we prioritize whom should we comply with their request and then why should we comply with so and so instead of not complying with all, because this leads to a burden from that point of view. And then also from a regulator point of view, the issue of information asymmetry remains a problem, because all the interested and affected parties to understand the importance of how we should
based on the challenges that we have articulated. If I find that we have a special piece in that because we have aptly articulated the concerns and the expectation of that is to then make the combination, you know, out of each. I won't say you're not obliged to, I think this time, because once we have one clear comprehensive effort to put into place a program that will address transformation and cocktails that no longer have a character in shop, all of us under the manner of the environment that we have, we don't want transforming this place in that to the environment, come on and copy the city like that as a whole. We've done the input for now. We left with Salka and I've just sent a message to Salka to ensure that they attend. I'll be tomorrow or whatever, but they just have to attend. We can't afford to stop and we can't do this as an important exercise. I don't remember the talk of you now, but because that part, well, we definitely have to ensure that all of us have a bite. I'm going to be firm now. We will leave out comments. And for the first round, first that we have exhausted this one, asking questions, I will limit questions to and direct questions to three questions per member. If time runs out, I'll even constrain myself and not even give too many questions for the sake of ensuring that many members are supposed to ask questions. Three direct questions for now. I'll start right at the end, that's like under the member, what time?
is that we simplify
the scope of the 14.5 billion which is dedicated to refurbishment, what the portion would be for the adopted municipality? What progress has been made in terms of adopting the municipality and what amount? That's an indication of what amount is allocated to those municipalities. Then your opinion then on the issue of dismantling ESCOM as a monopoly. Do you think it's viable that you open up markets for the RTP, that, that the transmission might be considered to be a separate entity and be sold on a separate entity? And what effect will that have on pricing? The perception from the public in terms of pricing is that ESCOM's prices are not inflationary related. And that administered prices is negative for economic growth, and administered prices from NERSA is not, or your application to NERSA is way beyond the inflation rate. Inflation rate currently 5.6, and then your latest application indications is that you will be asking for 14%. Your views on that would be appreciated. And then to Kopka.
That's the third question, one of the Ross there.
The Kopka question, sir. Can I ask Kopka?
Okay, but I'm going to be straight to
thank you, I'll be very short.
Yes.
The interdepartmental task team, of course, long over the years. Your opinion on that, do you think we need the type of leadership from the relevant ministers in this regard?
Can I ask the hand again? I'm sorry I've lost it. Okay. Honorable Boyname, then we come to Honorable Smiley. Yes,
Thank you, Chair. I'm asking a question to in a situation where there is absence of competition, the tendency is that the supplier keeps on hiking prices. Now, the question is, the question is, can the government, in order to break the monopoly of ESCOM, get in place another supplier so that there is some kind of competition, because competition is always healthy for consumers. That is the first question. And the second question is to NERSA. NERSA regulates electricity prices and tariffs, and yet prices of electricity are escalating every time to an extent that they have now become unaffordable. Now, why can't NERSA stop this wholesale electricity hike? The last question is to NERSA also. You are looking to the fact that if somebody wants to apply to have his license revoked, this person has to wait for 12 months or to notify you, give you notice for 12 months. Does it really have to take 12 months for a license to be revoked? Thank you.
Yeah, before we go further, I remember, can I ask three direct questions? I'll answer that. Because if it's about a price hike for NASA, how is it very relevant for this situation here? I think the signals up until now has been quite subdued and focused. And if in any case, next week we're going to have an input on MIT D1 and 2, and also pricing. The whole issue of pricing, to prepare our committee, and the others are open to them as well, to prepare the parliament effect, to understand deeper the compliance and enforcement by NASA, you mentioned a couple of discrepancies. How many of them, the actual, is it possible to get the actual of a breakdown? And how does that information flow to PORTA in order for them to address it through missiles? This is if I can understand that thing. And your customer complaint, to what extent did they grow? And have you got the HR capacity actually to deal with those complaints? That's my three. I've got more. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the local government, I think you're right to say we need a differentiated approach. And because there's some municipalities that are doing fine on this and that are investing in their municipality. I think there is sort of a problem with pricing and subsidization, but that could possibly be dealt with in that municipality itself. So yes, we need to concentrate on those municipalities that aren't doing it. And I see you talk here about underpricing of services. Is that also underpricing of electricity services as well? Or is it underpricing of other services, and are they using their revenue to cross-subsidize these services? And if so, is this a case of trying to get them to then have cost-effective tariffs for other services? I'd be interested to find out your feelings around that. Then just to Eskom, I understand where you're going with this, but in a way you're contradicting yourself, because in the one side you talk about that the industry is in need of a transformational type overhaul, but then later on in your presentation you say there's no appetite for a major restructuring. I understand what you're saying here. I know that this is difficult, and I saw your spirit of saying that let's get together, let's cooperate, we can fix the present problems without a major overhaul. But I think that in the long term we do need a major overhaul, and I think that's part of the reason why we got into this thing, is because I think the institutional framework is not providing the right consensus for actors at different levels. So I don't think we can run away from this. We have to do it in that way. And my suggestion is, well, when you're calling for a kind of neutral broker in this, who can head this up. And perhaps what we should be looking at then is the National Planning Commission, because I think that what we should be doing here going forward, boy, that it's not just about fixing the 35 million rand backlog now. It's about saying what kind of distribution networks do we need to see throughout our municipalities and throughout ESCOM that can actually deliver on our 21st century energy needs. And we need to have the right institutional framework then to be able to get that kind of distribution network. And perhaps this is something for the Planning Commission to actually head up, along with obviously all the other stakeholders, to say that over the next 20 years, this is the plan, this is how we need to institutionally change this, and these are the kinds of investments we need to make in order to deliver on that particular vision. So maybe that should be the place that we can look at doing. Thanks.
Because the one thing that happens, driving the vexation, you pick up some of the questions that are actually answered by subsequent presentations. So this is the level of activity, where is the customer? Can you focus on the question? My material. My material.
It's not good.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we were speaking about the problem of skills, and the ESCOM was saying Section 197 for industry employees to be transferred to the RAE. And at the same time, we are talking about getting the municipalities, especially the metros, to take up the Kimoranyana municipality. Is it not going to cause again another havoc, as we are saying, 197 does not give them the power that is their power to have distribution alone? And with the skills, we were talking about
you were talking about shortage in the municipalities. What happened to the people who have been at EDI, who had proper skills? Couldn't they have been taken to fill up the skill shortage in the municipality? The last one, with ESCOM, I was in a constituency, in my constituency, where they have electrified, but their plan was wrong. And with this money that are short under unintended consequences of expenditure, is it not going to cause that, because now they have to replan and re-electrify the place. I just want to know who's going to incur the expenditure now.
Thank you, sir. Remember, I'm talking to NASA. And that's why I'm curious to understand how is it that the later does not have power to enforce compliance? How did that happen? Is that by telling me that the speaking is independent? Is it not that the problem is not
wrong.
The second one is on slide 10. NASA says alignment of the case. Sugar solar is better. If that could be lifted so that it is not what it is that the case.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.
in the recruitment chain. I'm sorry if I missed that, but it is elaborate, because one has a keen eye on what you recommend as a solution to that challenge. Thank you.
And we have one hour. Okay. I like your reading chapter. You need to keep the speeches on the hand and focus on questions. So the first question, three questions to Nasa. I just want to find out what informs the ranking for the cost structure in relation to repair and maintenance and capital charges. Beyond your normal adjustments of CPR, what really informs those decisions or those determination on those cost factors? The second question, Chairperson, is on you pointed out that you do allow municipalities for above guideline tariff increases. My question is, do they account for the use of that money? And if they fail to account for that use of money, do you draw back the above tariff guideline increases? The third question, please educate me on the regulatory framework of NAFTA. There's revenue allowed for municipalities and for export. I assume, I might be wrong, I assume they do account for the use of that revenue. If not, is it not a weakness in the legislation that we should be ensure that they account for the use of that revenue, and hence we'll be able also to pick up the trend whether they are complying with issues of maintenance or not?
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Engineer. With that, you will then at home and call.
Thank you, Mr. President. Honourable members, let me start with the last question in the way that I've written. The first question around the ranges of the cost structures. If we take salaries and wages, we get the directive that National Treasury sends to municipalities, and that's the number that we use. So if the salary was 6%, we use 6%. The power purchase cost, that we get from ESCOM, we have those numbers, so we use that number. That the increase from ESCOM, for instance, now that the ESCOM has an average increase of 16%, the one we approved for municipalities for ESCOM is 13.5%, so we use that number. Finance charges, which is on the other, we use what National Treasury issues of that, and maintenance on the other, we use inflation 6%, and we detail all of these things when we send that to the municipalities to say that this is how the industry will be. So they are the ones who salaries and wages are given as the directives, I think the MCPEF is one of the documents that we use. The other is the actual prices increase. All of those that emanate from. Now, the second one around the guideline increases, municipalities or any other other private distributors, in some cases, they still operate the additional revenue that we get. For instance, the guideline increase that we use, it says that if your cost structure, if your percentage power cost is 70%, then this is what you get. But if your percentage power cost is 55%, which is what you find with the Uruleni, and 80%, which is what we find with the MNAPI municipality, then the answer is not going to be exactly the same. But in a case where the answer is exactly the same, your cost is 70% and your maintenance is 10% and your other is 5%, but you still want to use you still want to collect additional revenue to do additional things. I think there was a member from Tehuini municipality, which was the one of the municipalities, in the previous year they said that they want an additional 1% because they want to employ more staff, they want to attract more of the technicians, so the technicians are moving more to the housing area, so they want to do that. They gave us a number of the number of technicians they would have, and when we got to the end of the year and they were reporting, they didn't have those number of technicians and they didn't have that, so in this year's tariff we have had to claw back that. So in most cases we do claw back, and in some cases I think there are things that fall in between the cracks. And the reason is probably what was spoken about, disinformation asymmetry. Sometimes when you want information from municipalities and they don't have it, they really don't have it. smart meters. At the end of the year, they are not putting those smart meters, so we should bear the 0.25% that they will give us for that. So we do, but I think we can still do better going forward. Now, in the one about allowing the residue in accounting for it, yes, in EFCOM, the method we use is they allow revenue in their account for it, and in municipalities, we also use that they come back and they account for it. We allow certain things, for instance, like that they must accumulate a surplus, which is above 10%, the range we give them is 10-15%. Others do accumulate a surplus that's bigger than that, depending on their customer mix. Because if you look at the municipalities, they are not homogeneous. Some of them are not even supposed to be distributing electricity because they are 90% domestic and there's only one health store or another store that will do that, and it is not an ideal situation that you have. You need the municipalities that are structured like a Mulaney in Newcastle that have a big, good customer base of your industrial and then a nice mix of your domestic. Then you will have the relevant and the appropriate cost subsidies that ensure that electricity is priced appropriately, which is why what you have right now is your ESCOM. That is, to a large extent, having a nice customer mix, and you have some municipalities that won't have the relevant customer mix. So you are getting a case now where the price difference between those that are supplied by ESCOM is anything between 10 and 150%, because others are just not supposed to be municipality supply, but it is not the best way to have them. Hence the talk about the regional electricity distributors. So to come up with the mixes of customers that will ensure that you evenly distribute and you evenly apply cost subsidies that ensure that the prices are not going in a direction that you're not supposed to take them. I trust that the question applied in the international on that. The next question was from the Honorable Professor, when he says that why can't NESA enforce the compliance? It's the law that states that if you want a license to be revoked, under the section that says revocation of license, for a license to be revoked, the section says that the licensee must apply. So it's not NESA who's going to, the licensee must apply, and when they apply, the licensee says in section A and B, you must give NESA 12 months notice. It's the law. All we're doing is implementing the law. As I said, we have a three-job statute. What we do is what the law says. There's the other part where we can go to a high court and do an application of the notice. It also has its own issues. The other one of saying that if they don't meet the license conditions, what can you do? The first thing that the law says is, alleged that they don't meet that or they don't conform with that, we must give them a notice and reasonable time for them to conform. If they don't conform to that notice after was given them a reasonable time, so it's not like the speed cop that says you're driving at 60, yes, you're fine. But even if we were to do it like that, if we give them a fine and say you're driving at 60, if they don't pay, it is not a consequence not to pay a lesser license and a fine. So if they have no, if you've given them a license and a fine, and they don't pay for the criminal offense, they can do another one tomorrow, but there's nothing you can do. And it is those limitations in the legislation that make it. But however, knowing those limitations, there are things that we've done, and I keep saying that exactly in the same way the Auditor General has done. If you make the people who are getting that service to be aware of what the limitation is, you make them aware that the service that you're supposed to be paying is 5 cents or 10 cents, they also apply the necessary pressure to the municipality, and the municipality is also correct, which is why it is easier on the case of tariffs. What it is not easy on is on the case where they are supposed to spend 10% on maintenance and they are not spending that 10% on maintenance. It's not easy to enforce that because it's always in that way. But it's really the legislation that comes down with the makers not to be able to implement some of the things again. But even with those limitations, yes, there are other measures that we make the information available, and then the people in hand are the ones who go back and say to inquire since the thing. I if my colleague here may have to address the other ones that I have not addressed.
Okay, yes, thanks, the chair and honorable member. I will start with the question you raised, chair.
on a memorandum of agreement which we propose as a recommendation. For us, we think that a memorandum of cooperation or a memorandum of understanding, depending on what would be the best appropriate legal instrument which we can have, we will support that. So we just propose that for consideration by other stakeholders. So whatever would be deemed appropriate and satisfactory by all parties, I think we will be able to support that. And then there was a question on the deforms, that is to whether do we send those deforms in hard copy or pages. What we do now, actually we do it electronically. We are being contacted to at municipalities in the electricity side in most cases, or in the CFO, or in the office of the chief financial officer. So we liaise with those people telephonically, and then we alert them that now we are sending them the deforms, and then they confirm a receipt of the deforms. And then they got deforms at the present moment in an Excel spreadsheet. So we also provide them with support to help them to complete those forms. And then although there are a number of challenges whereby some of the municipalities, especially those which are not present, outlining that some of the information they don't know how to get it or to give us accurate information and all things like that. So it's a matter of capacity building at like the C level to help them to master the deform so that they can be able to submit the required information.
That's the last point.
Yeah, we would welcome any input, because even from our side, what we do, we also do a diagnosis of if ever licensees are having challenges in completing the deforms. We try to give them room to tell us exactly what are the shortcomings, what are their challenges. If ever there are issues of complexity, how can we simplify the form so that they can be able to report them to us? We try to make it an interactive process rather than it be a one-sided process. That's what we are trying to enable it. And then, Professor, you raised the issue of the alignment of legislation to say that can't we actually come up with appropriate action-driven target to say how can that be done? From us, given the fact that we are the implementers of legislation, what we recommend is that the policymakers need to sit down and then analyze those policies, and then we can contribute to the process of identifying the gaps as well as the areas of the policy alignment, and contribute to that particular team which will be looking at the different legislation and see which areas are their clashes, and then how can we come up with a reconciliation process which can ease the misalignment. So that one, basically, we throw it to what we can call the national department to be able to look at that, and then we will be readily available to give input to that whole process of harmonizing that legislation. That's why we raise the issue also of a central portal, which can be best managed by the Statistics South Africa, so that when I need information on generation capacity in the country, even the IRP, the planning, existing and non-existing and everything, we can centralize that so that even when one institution speaks about that generation data, you find that they speak from the same information which we as the regulator will be speaking from, even other departments will be speaking from. So that will actually eradicate a situation whereby one institution speaks about different numbers and then the other speak about different numbers while you're talking about the same thing. So our information credibility and validation of the data can be best managed in a centralized environment. And then the other quick issue which was highlighted is about how from our side we can be able to address the issue of, as Chair, you have helped us to say that the pricing and the other tariff-related methods of them being becoming unaffordable, to be honest with you, is just an independent subject by on its own, whereby we can be able to prepare and come up with all the comprehensive breakdowns about how do we determine the tariffs, and then
what are the inputs, what are the parameters, and anything assumptions which we're using, what are the assumptions, where do we solve those assumptions, and what impact we can be able to clearly provide that. I believe that covers most of the outstanding information.
Impact of hiking the price that high is very huge.
But what I would also like to highlight, just to close or to make sure that we have a complete picture, is that also if you look into the past, is that our price increase has been under inflation, and I think there is an effect that has been out there in the public for a while. And I think the other one is that generally we have been saying that the tariffs are actually not cost effective. So going into the future, we need to get to that level, but it has to be done in a very responsible way that is not going to impact very negatively on the growth of the economy, and more importantly on the people that are very poor in the country. We need to be very sensitive to that. And there was another question on how much of the refurbishment money is dedicated to new technologies. We actually have a very well-established research environment in ESCOM where we are continuously looking at new technologies and how we can integrate them into our business. And in fact, here in this province, we have a new compact substation, which was commissioned, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago, which is very, you know, in terms of the footprint, it's very small. It uses a gas-insulated, it's a gas-insulated substation, GIS, and it's part of what we do as we look forward. We look at the technologies, and we look at how we can integrate them into the business. And you will find that in our refurbishment money that I'm putting here, is that is taken into account, you know, going into the future. The issue on contradiction in terms of my presentation, it may very well be so, but I think where I was really coming from is that if you have been talking for 20 years, you know, moved towards a certain direction, I think the dilemma for me is that how do you then achieve the results without talking for another 20 years? So it's really an issue of the starting point, where do you start? And probably also in the process, you can start by doing something, but then in parallel start addressing the other bigger institutional challenges that we have, which need to be dealt with as well going forward. So it really is just a matter of where you start and also showing some results and some commitment. You know, you show commitment by doing things and not just by talking for a very long time. The fifth question was on skills, that if we were to put together all the vulnerable municipalities and, you know, consolidate them in some form or other, wouldn't we run into the Section 197 requirements again? My understanding is that if you are
what's the Section 197?
Well, Section 197 is about moving employees to another entity and moving them with the current conditions of service. So in other words, if you are working for the city of Cape Town and you are moving to the REG, the conditions of service that apply to you whilst you are at the city of Cape Town should actually apply when you are in the REG, and then with time you will converge. So if Nyabu REG by 5 as company, you need to go in there with your set of conditions of service, and then with time you can then converge. And as new employees get on board, you then have new set of conditions of service. So that's really what it's about. Because it impacts on salaries, your benefits, that's what it's about. So here, my understanding is that if you are moving from a municipal entity to another, it shouldn't be an issue. But if you're moving to a different entity, you know, it is something that probably would have to be revisited. You know, we haven't done the work here, so we have to deal with it when we get to that situation now. And another one is the wrong details on, or the wrong plan for the electric station. I think for that one, we need details to understand, you know, what happened, you know, who would carry the cost. Without that detail, I'm unable to guide in terms of who would pay for the cost or not. But principally, if you look at how we do electric station, normally it's informed by the IDP. We get very much involved in the IDP process, and we get guided by those IDPs to say where should we go and electrify, and then we go and electrify according to that. So if somewhere along the line, you know, there are some changes, we should be able to either catch them before we regazette in October, and if we don't, then we'll have to come back to that area and electrify. So it might be a matter we chew rule number one and then we end up doing number five before number one, and then we need to come back and work with the municipality to do that. Nevertheless, I would still have to come and get some details to understand what the issues are. Richard, I think that's the question for ESCOM that I picked up.
Okay.
Different departments, we have the problem giving them loans, you know, and managing that process is very critical or very important to us, because you deepen the loan instead of using it to refurbish the electricity, then use it to pay for operation. You know, so it is all these issues that talk to, you know, lack of coordination and misalignment, even at national level. No, and hence we say that we, you know, there needs to be, even for accountability purposes, Parliament must come and play a role in the system. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I hope Nusa informed me when I know Section 197. It's been some time when I've been in the Union Branch. In fact, our time, because it was before, okay, we leave what we did there. We just fought for the US for all kinds of time. Honourable Member, I think let's take a break now. We actually set up for okay.
I expressed my question to the panel. Both of them. The first one, I don't know why the expression that people like what I was saying, my wife sensing that their hands are tied, they are too successful to quit with me. But my question was, why is it that it sets up these? My second question again on the alignment of legislation. I was saying NESTA are foot soldiers, they're on the ground. They are seeing that the legislation is not aligned. I was saying would not be better for them to say the legislation that we are referring to, that is tying our hands, the second three and second service, as legislators to assist them to do that. Thank you.
Or in other words, Prof, have you done anything on that for the ERA amendment? Or with ERA and ERA amendment? You know, that's a sort of a supplement of that.
Apologies, Honourable Professor, for misunderstanding the question. The second part of the question, the alignment, yes, we have brought these inputs to the amendment of the proposal, but we can still provide that information that if you look at our legislation, you must do this, you find another legislation, the Municipal Finance Management Act, for instance, saying that no municipality may do this, but yet your Electricity Regulation Act allows that those things were brought into the attention of the amendment of the Electricity Regulation Act, the one that was being legislated, but we can provide that information. On the other one, I think it is correct that yes, our legislation was intended to do certain things, but in that process of trying to net this and show that when we tighten on this side, we are not going to be stepping into the toes of other people. And I think the representative Matawa from COP has already indicated that in some of these things, even the interpretation and the understanding of what needs to be done is so different and so varying that there does need to be a rethink on how the legislation as a whole is packaged to ensure that when you say you have a regulator who is given much importance by this legislation, that legislation enables them to do that, not a legislation that makes them to be able to only move only the steps that they're allowed to move, which do not at the end of the day make the necessary impact. But I apologize for misunderstanding.
What we've been doing since this morning, we've grouped presentations which create some kind of a framework. If you look at the kind of presentations of ESCOM, NASA, COCTA, Department of Energy, they are more or less the trendsetters. Now, from this afternoon, after lunch, we're going to get into what one can call the finance and the funding option, you know. When would like those who are going to be presenting your national treasuries, your finance and fiscal, your DBSA is around, even tomorrow morning the insurance sector, other finance elements, your Musa, BBC, all of that, they would sort of be coming from that angle now. Let's talk about financing. I'm sure you understand why it's kind of like you want to be a bit restrictive, but that's the kind of a thing. Then after we have a second
kind of institution that we be saying that this is what we are trying to do, because there's a vacuum, there's a gap now. The five Northwest will be coming, the five center will be coming back again, the five Berlin will be sharing their experiences, the five in the city of Cape Town will be sharing their experiences. So I can see media is moving. I hope they'll be back, because we'd like them to cover also the demand side. Can you come back at Kurabas 3? Please start at Kurabas 3. Oh, only Kurabas 2. Start there, please transform me. Kurabas 2. They are the first ones outside.